America's Heroes Group and Roundtable of Public Policy. And we've got some great folks on because you know them all. Our panelists have called in. We have Dr. Arnold, Dr. Damon Arnold. Doctor, how are you? Colonel Doctor. How you doing?
Doing, Cliff? Great.
Good, good, good. Great to hear your voice.
Great, same.
Good, good, good. We also have Rochelle Crump on the line. Rochelle, how are you?
I'm an accountant, sir, and hello to all my comrades.
Yep, they're all here. And we have Sean Claiborne. Sean, how you doing?
Pretty good.
Good, 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 good. Glad to have all of you on. We're missing one, and we'll see how long that takes. But what we want to talk about, of course, is the CNN audio, poison control calls rise in Kansas following Trump's injection suggestion. And, of course, you know, we got a doctor on our panel here. Ask him about
increase.
This.
That is what the Poison Control Center in Kansas says it was dealing with Monday, a 40% increase in cases specifically involving cleaning chemicals. This days after the president of the United States made the ridiculous and dangerous suggestion that maybe injecting disinfectants into the human body could treat coronavirus and should be studied. The health secretary of Kansas saying at a news conference that one case even involved a man who drank a product, quote, because of the advice he received. Joining me right now is that health secretary of Kansas, Dr. Lee Norman. Dr. Norman, thank you so much for being here. I have a lot of questions for you about what is happening on the ground in Kansas in the fight against the coronavirus. But first, just on this, the president shrugged off any questions about upticks in calls to poison control centers. What are you hearing in your state?
Well, we are seeing an uptick in the numbers. It's not entirely due to ingesting the substances, but we did get very specific calls, people that drank a substance, the one man you mentioned. There are others that called in, and thank goodness they had the good sense of saying, I've heard that this is kind of a do-it-yourself way to prevent coronavirus. Is this something that I should consider doing? And it was good to have those anticipatory calls so that the answer to that would be no.
Yeah, I guess we'll take that as that's a good thing. I mean, look, everyone needs to take responsibility for what they're putting into their bodies. But, Dr. Norman, do you think you would have gotten so many calls if the president hadn't said this from the White House?
You know, there's always accidental ingestions. There's kids that get into things. So there's always X number of calls. It might be about 50 calls a month to the poison center for accidental or suicidal intent. But the number is clearly uptick. Now, some of the increase in numbers, I'm quite certain, is because the parents and adults are around more. Kids are home from school, so there's just more kids, especially in approximation. But the calls asking if they should be taken internally, that was a change from the usual.
Yeah, I would hope so. On the all-important issue of testing, Kansas ranks last in testing for the coronavirus. The governor saying the way that
Hello?
Yeah. Yeah.
What about Dr. Arnold?
This is Dr. Arnold?
Yes.
Yeah. Hey. Hi. Go right ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, the increase of 40% in cases of poison control calls has a, you know, direct relationship to something that someone says, especially if they're in a position of authority. There are some considerations with stay at home and those kinds of things where kids are back at home and are more likely to get into things. So there is some truth to that. But the problem I have is that even in Illinois, our Poison Control Center actually noted a 36.5% increase in exposures to chemicals and household chemicals and cleaners since that statement was made. And usually this time of the year, back in 2019, we only had 750 calls. Now we had 1,024 calls. And some of it is that, you know, at home you have to be careful. Don't leave chemicals unattended because you have kids around, and making sure that you don't mix chemicals. You know, you use them in an open air, you know, aerated space. But the problem I have with the comment that was made by someone who was the commander-in-chief and saying this to people is that you have many people who have mental illnesses that aren't able to perceive the truth sometimes, or to think independently, and may actually use some of these chemicals. So you're endangering not just the general population, but also some subpopulations of people who are more vulnerable. And I think a lot of companies came out after that, like Lysol and those chemical companies, and said, what are you talking about? You don't do this. You don't inject yourself with chemicals. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it may give me a little bit of a flashback being in the military to Himmler. Sure. And to Mengele, when they were doing uncontrolled experiments in Nazi Germany and injecting people with things. And I think that this is really something that is just incomprehensible, why you would say something without having any kind of medical training or authority and make a suggestion to people to treat themselves with a chemical. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think it's very dangerous, and it should not have happened.
Should not have happened. I want to go to Sean. Ernesto, let's go to Ernesto now.
Yes, I am.
Yeah,
I'm here.
You're there. Yeah. Hi, Consul. How are you?
Technical problem.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is definitely. How can Congress help prevent this veteran suicide?
Well, you know, I think certainly they can appropriate some more money. And they need to, right now, it seems as if the Senate is so concerned about confirming judges right now, and Mitch McConnell, leave no vacancy unfilled with these judges. Mm-hmm. And, some of their efforts should be more focused on what's happening with the veterans, because a lot of, as we know, the veterans did not get some of the people who are working for the Veterans Administration. Hospitals didn't get the PPEs that they needed. Congress can do certain, a lot of people, from the doctor who committed suicide to veterans, certainly, who are committing suicide at an alarming rate. Congress can appropriate money, but of course that money has to be used properly.
Mm-hmm.
It must also continue to help end another public health crisis, the fat guys and the fat cats and all of that. But there needs to be somebody put in charge. I don't know if that they have a person who oversees, like a czar, maybe a suicide czar or something, that could oversee things like this. But it's just tragic, and as Doc was talking about, and our commander-in-chief talking about ingesting disinfectants and so forth. I do have one problem with the doctor who was sitting there, Dr. Birx, who, I think she should have gotten up and said something, because they know that he's talking, out of his whatever, and you can't allow this man to get on the air speaking like this, because people take it. As Doc said, some of the people are not mentally stable, and they hear it, and then they go out and they even commit suicide unintentionally.
Good point. So this is a CNN audio, Reviving America After COVID-19 Will Take Years, Not Months. Sean, can you Sean Claiborne, can you respond to that, please?
Cliff, we want to play the video first, okay, and then let Sean respond.
Okay.
Thank you.
Audio.
the debate over reopening and the numbers central to it. Let's take a look and go through the numbers. First, you just look here, a map of the cases in the United States. The bigger the circle, the higher the number of the cases. You see, obviously, the epicenter here in New York in the Northeast, but this is a virus touching the entire country. This is the saddest chart. When you look at this, April has just been a devastating month, approaching 54,000 deaths, approaching the death toll of the Vietnam War, a lot of it just in the last month here. And yet, nine states this week ahead will be an experiment in reopening. Different in Alaska, most businesses are opening. Montana, just retail businesses. Colorado, retail for curbside pickup beginning tomorrow. Minnesota, some non-consumer businesses. It's different in each state. Georgia's is the most aggressive. Hair salons, gyms, tattoo parlors already reopened. Starting tomorrow, movie theaters and restaurants can reopen. So you see these experiments playing out. Let's look at some of the numbers behind them. In Montana, sure, you can make a case. Big drop in cases, maybe time to experiment with reopening. Alaska, same. You see the curve. The doctors talk about flattening the curve, then sending it down. Alaska, heading down. Georgia, Texas, and Colorado is a more dicey picture. If you start at the high point here in Texas, you could make the case you're coming down, but you see the roller coaster. Very similar. Georgia is yellow. You can make the case that this is down from here, but you see the bouncing. That's what has many public health officials, many mayors worried. Same in Colorado. It's a lower case number. Seems flat, not really going down at the moment. Some other states, not ready. Look at Wisconsin. You're going up. Look at Arizona, heading up. Here's the state of Virginia, still heading up. One more, Arkansas, was flat for a long time, a spike. We'll watch this number in the week ahead. But the thing to watch is to keep a look at this map. Georgia is the most aggressive. The president, a week or so ago, called the governor and said, go for it. Then his public health officials said, too much, too soon, and the president pulled back.
Interesting.
But I'm saying let the governors do it. But I wasn't happy with Brian Kemp. Spas, beauty parlors, tattoo parlors. No, but I'm letting you make your own decision. But I want people to be safe. And I want the people in Georgia to be safe. And I don't want this thing to flare up because you're deciding to do something that is not in the guidelines.
Sean?
Consistency.
Yeah, Cliff,
it's really too soon
to tell exactly when, how long this will last. The thing that's critical you have to understand is that we've lost over 30 million jobs over the last 6 weeks. We've lost pretty much all the jobs that were created since the Great Recession during that time frame. During the Great Recession, we only lost about 9 million jobs. So this is really, really critical at this point. So what people are concerned about is that, you know, because we've lost so many jobs and so many businesses are shut down and kind of squeezed, because there was no income coming in, revenue coming in for so many people, that we might have, it might take years for this economy to get restarted. So that's really what the critical point that people are trying to assess. But there's too many variables out there to really tell whether or not it might take a few months. It has the capacity to maybe come back within a few months. Actually, the economy does have that capacity. So it's too soon to tell to actually just basically count out what we call a U-shaped recovery, where you go into the decline, economic decline, and come out of it at about the same pace. What's out of the question was called a V-shaped recovery. So it's very unlikely that we're going to come out of this quicker than we got into it, the mess that we're into right now economically. The stock market and the economy, people have to remember, are two different things. So you could see in the stock market a quick rebound, but that does not mean that there will be jobs created and then all these people that are unemployed right now will be back to work in 6 months or 5 months or maybe the next year. The one thing that can be done that we're not really talking about is retooling the economy and moving jobs from one place to another sector of the economy. Because you have a lot of, whenever you have a situation like this where there's a huge loss of jobs in a crisis, there's always tons of jobs that are created. And what we're seeing out here in the economy, there's plenty of jobs that are not being done. So, for example, the tracing, you know, creating the PPE that people need for the protective gear and the equipment they need for their safety. There's, you know, a lot of medical jobs and support jobs in the medical field that need to be done. You have the military having to chip in, the National Guard having to chip in order to cover some of these shortfalls. But even in that situation, there's simply not enough people out there to cover the needs that they're not being met in this global pandemic. So we have to get people out there delivering the food, stocking the shelves, getting the toilet paper, and the Kleenex is always running out at the grocery stores. That has to be rebooted. You know, so during this time frame, we're missing that opportunity to retool the economy and also shift jobs where people don't have jobs to do some of the things and tasks that need to be done right now to solve the crisis. During World War II, right after the Great Depression, we were able to do that. We took people that weren't working. We took women, for example, who were at home being housewives and brought them into the labor force to actually produce the weapons and gear and things like that to fight the war. And that helped us get out of the Great Depression. We can do the exact same thing today, but we don't have the leadership, unfortunately, and there's not enough organization, unfortunately, to get this done at this point. Because this has to be done very, very quickly in order for that to be successful. We can't wait until, you know, we see what happens with these states reopening up too soon. If some of them open up too soon and we have a rebound or spike in the coronavirus outbreak, then we can be in a worse situation than we're in today. And we've seen that in other places around the world and even on a lot of different sectors of different economies around the world, that when you reopen the markets on the economy too soon, it actually causes the pandemic a chance to refoot itself and actually do worse than what it did the first time around. So we have to be very, very careful. So that's one of the key things we have to think about.
Well put, well put. We have CNN audio about something that we had talked about briefly earlier. Can we have that audio, please?
The audio is the Navy recommends to the Defense Secretary to reinstate Captain Brent Kozar. Please play it.
Which we had talked about just briefly, which I think was very interesting. Be restored to command.
Today, Admiral Michael Gilday, Chief of Naval Operations, Uniform Head, Four-Star Admiral of the U.S. Navy, made a recommendation to Defense Secretary Mark Esper after an investigation of the entire incident that lasted several days. The full investigation. Admiral Gilday, we have now learned, recommended to Secretary Esper that Captain Brent Kozar be restored to command of the USS Theodore Roosevelt, the aircraft carrier that has a crew of nearly 5,000. Captain Kozar grabbing world attention when he sounded the alarm that he was deeply concerned his troops were not properly being looked after as coronavirus spread through that ship. But what has happened here today at the Pentagon is a very unusual turn of events. Admiral Gilday made the recommendation to Secretary Esper this morning. At this hour, Secretary Esper, we are told from multiple sources, has not accepted the recommendation, not accepted the recommendation of his Navy leadership, indicating he wants more time to think about it. That is not the signal we got earlier today when the chief spokesman for Esper, Jonathan Hoffman, spoke on camera to reporters and said, and let me just tell you in part what he said, that Secretary Esper is, quote, generally inclined to support Navy leadership and their decisions, but he will go into it with an open mind. And once he's briefed, they were supposed to come back to reporters. So it was a signal that Esper was inclined to accept the recommendations of Navy leadership, even though he wanted to get the full briefing, think about it, all of that, of course. But at this hour, Admiral Gilday, the leader of the uniform U.S. Navy, somewhat left hanging because he can't get an agreement at this hour to his recommendation that Kozar be restored to command. So it's hard to describe this other than sort of an unending military political drama, and we will see where it goes. Unanswered, of course, in all of this is whether President Trump intends to weigh in. Brianna?
Interesting.
Yeah, and you have to imagine.
Rochelle? Rochelle, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah.
Captain Kozar, rightfully was concerned about the safety of the sailors in which he led, his own health, I'm sure. We're not talking about a breach in the Navy's mission. We're talking about a national crisis, pandemic, in which we're all concerned about. He tried to save lives, of the volunteers who answered the Navy's call to service. We have to look at that. And I applaud him, for doing what he did to sound the alarm. He's a hero, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Anytime you step out of your comfort and the norm of your position, to do what's right, regardless of knowing what the consequences are.
Sure.
I think, that's what you call leadership. Mm-hmm. And I hope that's what the Navy thought about when they considered, pretty much to try to make right with him and reinstate him. And, you have to applaud the Navy, too, for trying to step in and make right what was done wrong. But also, you understand that with him, it's got to be questionable as to whether or not he can trust them. Mm-hmm, you know, because mm-hmm. going forward, there may be others that he may be subject to scrutiny of, who may have the ability to block some of his future career. So, you know, when you look at all that has been done, it's got to be some trust there, but it's got to be rebuilt. And, of course, it's not going to be rebuilt in just a minute of the, you know, of them trying to reinstate him to his service. I salute him. I salute those that are, you know, serving land, air, and sea. I've got a member on the USS Porter that we worry about, you know, and we hope that there's advocacy in every branch and every avenue of a service to make sure that they're getting just as much protection where they are serving as we are as citizens here. You know, they're secluded in a way that we can't really know about what's going on. So we have to keep our prayers going for them, and we have to make sure that the public has an outcry for those who don't and have the ability to sound the alarm like he did, you know, which he should be applauded for.
I agree.
So, I could ask you something, Rochelle, but don't you think that...
Identify yourself.
Start at the top. Yeah.
Ernesto,
this is Ernesto.
This is Ernesto. Go right ahead, Ernesto.
But don't you think that that started at the top? I mean, I don't think it was the Secretary of the Navy or even the Secretary of Defense that ordered his dismissal. I mean, I think it came from higher up. And,
oh, yeah. Absolutely. And they took care of that. You know, they terminated that person. They moved him to another position also.
Well, he was the acting Secretary of Navy. But, you know, it came from above of him because all the admirals, I think, were supporting Captain Crozier, were they not, other than the Secretary of the Navy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And he needs to be applauded. You know, pretty much that's what it is. When you save lives, you deemed as a hero. And he saved some lives by getting help. He's calling for help. And you can't dismiss that. So, you know, I get what you're saying, and I know that, you know, it's debatable in terms of what the gentleman said about, you know, he violated the mission pretty much is what he was alluding to, and that was not even the effort at all on his behalf.
Yeah, Dr. Arnold, you got anything to say on that?
Yeah, I think it's your rank. I think Ernesto's point in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the things is the commander-in-chief, when you start dealing with the lives of the military, you have a responsibility to serve and protect the people of the country and serve and protect the military that you're asking to go and potentially give their lives for this country.
Right.
And when you get to that point, you have to start looking and saying, you cannot mix politics with the lives of those people. And when you start playing, you know, political tactics and games, whether it be the president, the congressional members, any duly elected official that we are putting into office with the trust of the people, they have to understand that they have a political line they cannot cross when it comes to the safety and security of this nation. And by putting those people in jeopardy, we could have been drawn very easily into a war if everyone on that ship got sick.
You got that right.
Attacked.
Absolutely.
Lieutenant Jeffries is calling in. Lieutenant Jeffries, hi. How are you?
Hi, Cliff and your esteemed panel. How are you guys doing today?
Great, Lieutenant. Yeah, we got a couple of seconds. Tell us what
you think. Okay, I agree wholeheartedly, but I do think that Captain's career is over, even though he truly is a hero and he was only thinking of his sailors. With this president, everything is about him. He thought the captain was trying to embarrass him, and that was not it. And this is the thing. When you're a commander, it's not just your life. It's your all your personnel's lives. And I am concerned about the readiness of our country. And the last thing I will leave you guys with, elections have consequences. And if any of the young people are considering going into the military, it's still a viable option. Please take the ASVAB. And if you all need to reach out, please find your high school counselor or your ROTC instructor. Thank you, guys, and y'all have a great day.
Okay, thank you so much. good advice, right? Good advice.
Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. We got a minute left. Who wants it?
Well, John, I just want to say
she had a great point about the fact that we need to really take a look at how our national security is being exposed by this virus and what's going on in this crisis. Okay. Crises can bring down great nations, but it can also be an opportunity for a great nation to rise.
That's true.
And we're missing that opportunity. The United States became one of the most the biggest superpowers because of World War II, outside of World War II.
Right.
So this is a great opportunity for us to actually retool our economy, get people to work, and actually change some of the things that we're doing that maybe we shouldn't have been doing before the crisis.
Yeah, and this is Dr. Arnold. One thing I would like to say is for everyone to get their flu shot, just a reminder, starting up a campaign now about that. Because
okay.
If we do have a second wave in the fall, please get your flu shot so you don't end up putting an extra surge on that healthcare system in the fall.
Thank you so much, Dr. Arnold. Ernesto.
Ernest, I just want to say that, and Sean, I know you're the financial person, but I actually got funded yesterday from your bank, even though I didn't have a relationship with your bank prior to talking to you, but for my business, so that I hired everybody back. And I'm able to pay my landlords and everybody else. So
thank you for saying it. I'm glad that happened too.
God, I didn't have a relationship.
Yeah, Rochelle and Sean. Thanks to all of you. Appreciate it.
The Talk of Chicago and the Voice of the Nation, 1690 WVON, Berwyn, Chicago.